All right, y'all, it's spring, and you know what that means. It's time to start planning our summer festival traveling. Yep, it's time to get into my Airbnb bag cross-country, a.k.a. Time to visit my homes all across the country. And you know what I never think about? Why not list my own spot on Airbnb and host some folks at my house? I mean, my house is cute. Yes, let's make money while we're spending money. Just trying to help you out, man, because your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio.
What up, QLS listeners and viewers? I see you. Actually, I don't. But anyway, we are back with part two of Questlove Supreme's episode with DJ Drama. Now, don't forget, this was filmed on location in Atlanta, Georgia, and we recorded this episode in T.I.'s studio, which is really a dope spot. So make sure you watch or listen to part one. That's where Drama, you know, my homie from CAU, talks about his Philly upbringing, his respect for Questlove and the roots, and making critical inroads with T.I. and Jeezy, and finding his tribe in Atlanta. All right, y'all, let's get ready. Here we go with part two.
As a mixtape DJ, you're locking it down. But as far as now when you're DJing in clubs, if I'm hiring you to DJ a party in 2006, mm-hmm. 2007, how long is your set? And are you doing just exclusive stuff that is exclusive to you? Or are you still just like doing regular DJ stuff? And
so really what wound up happening was around that time, I actually wasn't doing a lot of gigs because I then became DJ Drama. And I went literally from getting paid $300 from doing parties in Atlanta to them not being able to afford me. And then I was also tips DJ, so I was on the road. So I wasn't doing a lot of my own gigs. I would here and there, I would get hired, but I would probably do like a 2-hour set and I would, you know, but this is still a time when like, so I guess Serato was already out.
Right.
So I would do like big gigs. Like, I remember when Vibe had like the Vibe something down here and Outkast perform, like they would book me for that, or like BT would book me. And, you know, I was playing, like I would mix it up. I mean, I would do what was hot, but I would also, you know, kind of play some gangster girl shit.
So are you a business in terms of like now you have a manager and an agent and a staff?
Yeah,
office space, like
definitely. We had Walker Street was our office.
Shout out to Janice.
Janice worked for us. I had Jason Brown was handling all the distribution. Orlando McGee was my first manager, and yeah, because then I got, you know, the opportunity to get an album deal. I mean, I literally met with every label at one point, as far as like their interest in signing me as a DJ to do a Gangsta Grillz album, you know, and based upon my loyalty and I had known the building, I signed to Grand Hustle Atlantic. But yeah, I definitely had staff and a manager and, you know, we, the whole nine.
So with dedication, like how did that come to?
I was on the bus with Tip. We were on the Urban Legend tour. He was on the phone with Wayne. I heard him talking to Wayne, and I was like, yo, let me holler at him. So I remember being on my bunk, and I just got on the phone with him, and I was like, what's up? And I was like, you know, and at that time, Wayne was doing his Squad Up mixtape thing.
Yeah.
So I was using a lot of those songs on Gangsta Grill, so I knew he was kind of in his mixtape bag. And I was like, yo, you know, we got to get one. And he was like, yeah, you know, I mean, he was already familiar with me. And I remember coming off tour for a time, and I went to Stankonia and met with Wayne and Tez, and we just kind of like went over. I brought him a bunch of instrumentals, just options of things to rap on and things of that nature. And I literally just came up with the name Dedication, just like, let's call it Dedication. And he was like, all right, cool. And Rob Petrozzo, who used to do all my artwork, came up with the cover, which was, you know, legendary.
Right.
And, you know, because by that point, Gangsta Grills was a brand, like, you know, when I was moving them throughout the Southeast or up North or what have you, people were already like, okay, if it's a Gangsta Grills, like, we need it, we want it. And the Wayne tape, you know, I remember when he sent me the music and listening, and I was like, yo, this shit is different. This is not the wobbledy wobbledy drop it like it's hot kid. Right. Like, he's on some shit. Up. Like, yeah. Some real bars on here. And, you know, when I did the tape, and I had known, like, yeah, this is a moment, you know what I'm saying? And then it really turned into a moment. And so it was like back to back for me, because I had just did Trap or Die, and then Dedication happened, and it was like Wayne was on fire from, you know, Carter to Dedication to, you know, coming into his own. And so here I am, again, this kid from Philly who went to school in Atlanta, who's now the king of the mixtapes with Tip, Jeezy, and Wayne, or like, who are the hottest guys, not only in the South, but now in hip hop. And it was like, I'm in the mix. Like, I'm the platform for, you know, what's getting these niggas hot.
In your mind, and this is before, you know, the feds and the RICO stuff, but like, in your mind, what was the end game? Are you like,
wow, great question.
Let me start. Like, when do you're like, hey, I need to be Puffy, or I need to start my label, or I need, like, because in your mind, you're like, whoa, I was just in college, you know,
facts,
7 years ago. Right. Now, like, I determine what the future is.
You know what it really was? When I first got hot or got popular or became that guy, the only thing that I told myself is, yo, okay, you got here. Like, from 92 to 05, like, there was a lot of legwork to get here.
Right.
You got to stay here, Drom. Like, I didn't know how or what it was going to be, but I just told myself, like, yo, like, you got to stay relevant, like, somehow, some way. And it happened in a lot of forms. I mean, my brother over here, like, when at the time when Gangsta Grills was known for trap music and Southern hip hop to an extent, you know, at the same time, like, their performance, it was at Apache Cafe or Yin Yang Cafe.
It probably was Apache.
It was Apache. And they, little brother had a show, and the bus was outside of the venue. And I came on the bus and we sat down. And I told them, like, yo, I'm a huge fan. I have been for some time. And then, you know, they told me the same in return.
Right.
And they were like, what do you think about doing a Gangsta Grills? And I was like, what? What are we waiting on? But yeah. Around the same time, I was getting pushback from various people, like, wait, you're going to do a tape with who? Little Brother and Pharrell? Like, that's not Gangsta Grills. Like, how does that make sense? And, you know, I've always looked at myself like John Singleton and Martin Scorsese.
Right.
Like, I can make Boys in the Hood, but then I can go and make Poetic Justice, and I can make Higher Learning, and I can make Baby Boy. So that was how I approached it. So that the fact that people were, like, pushing against, this is not a platform for Little Brother, was, like, so, like,
making
put a
you want
battery
to do it.
In
yeah.
my back. Like,
yeah.
Not only, like, what are y'all saying? My shit's not, and I say on the tape,
he say,
like,
yeah,
you thought my shit wasn't going to sound good on this? Yeah, like.
And that was our mentality going into it, too. Like,
I mean, hence the name,
yeah,
you know, Separate But Equal. It's,
yes.
It's so iconic in so many ways.
Shit.
Like,
how are you talking Wayne into, because, you know, to be honest, it was kind of perplexing that
he chose that beat.
Really?
He chose that beat.
You didn't even know I was going to ask you first.
He chose that beat.
All right.
Wayne chose. And that just shows.
Wayne rhymed over loving it.
Well, no, no, no. I'm talking about Star.
He rhymed over loving it, yeah.
Well, yeah.
He rhymed over, yeah.
He rhymed over Star. And I'm like, God damn. Like, he's killing our shit more than our shit.
I was so anti-Wayne back then. I ain't hear none of it.
It's crazy. You missed Dedication?
I was on the radio. I was very anti all these things, and that's what I was known for. So, but I heard that Little Brother Joe though. That was dope.
But you listened to the Little Brother.
I did.
Tape.
You know I did. Don't
but
do
you
that.
Was front on. So you wasn't a gangster group. Oh yeah, she's one Don't. Of them ones. Like, when are you gonna do another Automatic Relaxation?
No. But, so what?
Like,
because that's Tyree. In me too.
Yeah, exactly.
Sin
K. Yeah, exactly. Like,
but I'm saying
like the Pharrell.
In my mind, I was like, I was like, man, maybe he held Wayne to gunpoint, like, you better rhyme over this Philly track or else I'm not going to, like.
Nah,
he was just.
He's from the cloth.
Wayne is a head, man.
A big giant, yes.
Wayne is a head,
fucking hip hop head.
Yeah.
You know, and it, for me, it was my, like, again, also coming from making Automatic Relaxations or coming from wanting to do this because of y'all, like, when Little Brother approached me and when Pharrell approached me, it was so exciting for me because it was one, it was an opportunity to branch out. And then two, it was an opportunity to like feel like I was giving back to my roots, no pun intended.
Right.
But like what? Like, yeah. I could make a Little Brother Gangsta Grills, a Pharrell Gangsta Grills. Like, oh man, once I open this door, that just opens the floodgates for, you know, for it to go in so many directions.
And for us doing that, when we did Separate Equal, like, because my whole thing was like, I hated I love listening to mixtapes, but I didn't want to make a mixtape. You know what I'm saying? Like, my thing was, if I'm going to take time to write these original rhymes, I'm not putting them shits over somebody else's tracks. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can take them new rhymes, I can put over a new beat. You know what I'm saying? And that's a new jam.
I loved it. I loved that our tape was like that.
Yeah, we only rhymed over, like, maybe one instrumental. The rest of that shit was all original joints.
Can we discuss the no drama version, though? Like, you know, I've had a...
You saw it. Yeah, but yeah. So
I mean, now that I have you
what's
here,
going on?
Let's talk. What did I miss?
So we did the tape, and that was in like we did Separate Equal. That was like 06. It was 06.
Yeah.
So maybe like what? Like shit. 2 years later, like we did a drama free version because time when we were
I just caught that. I was
It was a drama free version because we had the mixtape, but like all your drops on and stuff. But then if I remember this correctly, I think who we were putting it out, we were putting the project out with, they just didn't want.
Yeah. I mean,
they
just
wanted
it
straight up. You know what I mean? Because retail wouldn't put it in. Like, you couldn't get in certain stores.
They felt like
it was a mixtape. Exactly. So we was just like, all right, well, here's the records. And they was original records, and they was our fucking records. So, you know what I mean?
No, I mean, I get it. I mean, the fact that it was called Drama Free was definitely kind of made me sad. But
oh, man. Nah, and it wasn't no, like... That wasn't a shot at you. Nah, it was just like
drama
okay,
drama free. Like, yeah, no, like there's no DJ drama on here. Like,
it's kind of catchy though. I ain't mad at
shot.
It. It's,
yeah.
It's catchy as a motherfucker. Oh, it's shady.
Nah, I'm just playing.
Before the word shady
listen,
was out.
I got it. I mean, they're not the they're not the first person to do a version of the tape without me. I mean, Crenshaw exists on streaming platforms without me on there. That one hurts too. Like, you know, like
I was part of
Crenshaw.
Aren't you the spice in the?
I'm the bells and the whistles. Yeah, like yeah, like that. That was the thing about that was one. I mean, hence why, because when I did the tape with Jeezy, like the music didn't exist without me on it. So all the DJs had to play the versions with me on it, and he didn't give it out without me on it. So you would go to the club and hear Gangsta Grills all over because the music didn't exist without me on it.
Sounds like a do-over. Sounds like a.
I don't know. It's like almost hearing a Dilla joint without the siren and the Dilla Dilla beats.
Yeah.
Like, he thought he was fucking his shit up. Like, nobody will rhyme over this shit. And to me, that's...
that made it better.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, I like, to me, it would hurt. Like, I've never listened to the Separate But Equal drama-free version. Like, I don't even... It would hurt my soul to even hear it.
To be honest, yo, I think the Separate But Equal drama-free version, so, and it's crazy, after all these years, me and you have never talked about none of this shit. So, man, when we did that record, and I always just want to thank you, man, because I sent you those records, like, when our manager at the time, Doe, me and Poo had finished everything, and I just put the records in a sequence. I put all the songs in the sequence, skits, like, everything. And I was like, I think this worked, but whatever. I'm sure Drama do his thing. He'll change it up, whatever. Mm-hmm. I trust him. Mm-hmm. And so when they sent it back, we were on tour, and Doe was like, yo, Drum just sent the joint. And I was like, all right, cool. And I opened it up because this is, you know, MP3s. So yep. You will open it and see the track listing first before you load the shit up. Mm-hmm. And you kept the track listing the exact same way I did it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, holy shit. You know what I mean? Like, that was just a big honor.
Well, when
for
I
me,
listened
you know
to
what I mean?
When I listened to it and I heard it, and then I heard it in the way that the skits were and everything. Like, I'm not, like, you know, I know part of my job is, you know, there's people that want me to put it in an order or however to do my thing, but I'm not going to mess with something that's already dope. You know what I'm saying? So for me, it was already like, okay, I here's my bells and my whistles, but if this shit flows the way it flows, like, why change perfection? You know what I'm saying?
So, thank you so much. Nah, that I tape, always like, appreciated that, man.
Bro, like, I mean, you like the Little Brother and the Pharrell tape, like, came out at a time, and it came out literally like back to back. And those tapes are so important to me because, again, like, you know, from where I come from the cloth that I come from, and for what I was being known for at the time, and not that I was fighting against it, but it was like, yo, like, I want to show the world, like, I am hip-hop, like, mm-hmm. to its full, like, I am from the cloth, you know what I mean? And to be able to do those two projects were like,
nah, we both had a point to fucking prove, because for you, you know, you said it was proven like we were from that cloth. For us at that time, you know, we were coming off the minstrel show, and it was just like, ah, them niggas, they just some backpack hate niggas. And it was like, no, we fucking rap, you know what I mean? And it was just like, look, it don't matter if it's trap shit, right, whatever, like,
and
just be
from
dope,
the South,
you know what I mean?
So it was like, even that, in that sense of what people were looking at was Southern hip hop, and then, you know, us doing that tape and Separate But Equal, like, as a title, and y'all being from the South, like, it was great. It was a great moment.
Nah, it really was, man. And I'm so thankful that, you know, our paths like crossed in the way it
Me
did.
Too.
That shit was amazing.
Amazing.
I know that you rehashed the story over and over and over and over and over again. So I'm trying not to beat an already dead horse that you moved past. I mean, the question is basically, like, in 2007,
yep.
I'm trying to figure out how an industry that utilizes you to break open their artists. Like, and again, I'm a staunch East Coast head, you know.
Right.
Tariq himself.
Mm-hmm.
Listening to nothing but your mixtapes.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how I'm learning about Wayne. Like, this is how I'm getting my education mm-hmm. on what I need to learn about the rest of America and
yep.
step my niche. And I'm trying to, like, and I understand that there was a period between 2003 and 2008, especially, like, with record labels not knowing, like, if they're going to survive now, the streaming culture. Like, you know, we mm-hmm. already had the
Napster.
Napster. Yeah, like, around 2003, whatever, yeah, like, yep. that shit starts. But I'm trying to figure out how, like, you were definitely utilized
100%
and used
right by the labels
to break open people
mm-hmm.
like, so just in general, and not like from a 1 to 10, how shocked were you when you came home and like, wait, what the fuck is this? Like, did you have an inkling of a clue? Like,
none.
Or even when the shit was selling like hotcakes,
12
even when shit was selling like hotcakes, was there any person that was sort of like, have you ever received pushback from anyone that, like, you rhymed an instrumental over and, like, Jay's like, hey, why'd you use frontin'? Or why?
Never.
Nah. It wasn't on the artist. Like, that was a badge of honor to have someone, like, rap over your joint. It wasn't that.
So, I mean, there's a lot to unpack here. And,
right.
I know I've told the story. One part about it is, first off, it shows the disconnect within the labels, right? So as much as the marketing departments loved me, or the mix show departments, or, you know, the promotion department, how much I meant to them, the legal department of a label didn't understand.
They have a clue?
They don't get it. Like, what? Wait, what? Like, that's not cleared. Like, we're not, you know, wait, hold on. So they're, you know, I was friends with the promotions and the marketing side, but, you know, yeah, the legal department didn't. It didn't make sense to them. Why are we giving this free music out? And then this is also a time where, outside of my mixtapes, there were hundreds of other mixtapes that weren't sanctioned, that people were, you know, however, getting MP3s, hacking, for whatever way they were getting them, music was coming out that people didn't give permission for. And then on top of that, around this time, these mixtapes, Minds and others, started to show up in Best Buys and in Targets and in Walmarts with barcodes on them.
And that, yes.
So, and that, you know, and that made it confusing. And I just spoke about this on Math Hoffa because they brought up, you know, after I got raided, one of the people they asked about, what do you think about what happened to Drom, was Wayne. And Wayne said,
play the game fair.
Drom needs to play the game fair, smarter, like Clue or Khaled or something of that.
And but is it the same?
Yeah.
I mean, the reason why I never took offense to it is because, you know, there was a street code that went along with mixtapes for promotional use only, right? Yeah. Everybody knew that we were making money and, you know, that's how I was supporting myself. But when the mixtapes started to show up in the stores with barcodes, as an artist, I could understand how one could feel a type of way.
It ain't promotional use.
Yeah, because they're like, wait, hold on. Why is my shit in Target with a barcode and I'm not seeing a dollar from it?
Because they're okay not seeing a dollar if you're just selling it the way you're selling it, like from...
To an extent. I mean, again, now looking back on it, if at the wise age of 44 that I am now, in my 20s, the type of money that I was making, and I would have easily thrown someone a 25 or a 50 if I'm making X amount of dollars, like just as a quick thank you. It would have been a nice gesture. Like, but it, you know, on the other end, these guys are going and doing shows for $150,000 to $200,000 off of what we've built together. So, you know, I don't count anyone's pockets, nor did I feel like anyone should count mine.
And to be fair, and just, I mean, again, we've just talked about it now, but, you know, I never felt, you know, me, and I can speak, you know, for my brother Pooh as well. For us, it was never that. Like,
did ours show up with a barcode?
No, it didn't. Ours didn't show up on a barcode. I remember, like, watching it on the news and seeing, like, when they was taking, like, the CDs. Shit out.
Oh, they...
And they separate
equals was there.
Bro, I was like, what the fuck?
You saw your joint on the news?
Yeah, you see the goddamn police carrying your shit outside?
I don't remember that. Yeah, y'all's was there.
Bruh, that shit was nuts. So, but yeah, but for us, like you said, it was just a code of honor. It was just understood. It's like, okay, we do the tape. You know, Drom, he gonna move it on our end.
Yeah.
We'll do whatever on our end. We'll do press it shows, whatever. Right. Like, it was just, you know what I mean? It was a mutually beneficial thing.
And it was like that for most people. But, yeah, I think all those things came into play. I think the fact that, you know, 2007 was a very pivotal year for the music business where, you know, it was a transition and, you know, the bottom line wasn't adding up for them. And there's many theories or conspiracy theories or, you know, let's take the big guy out to shut this down. However, you know, hence I don't, you know, I do know that for a fact that people were told, artists were told, like, yo, if when Drom situation comes up, don't speak on it. Like, leave that alone. You know what I'm saying? Or, you know, nobody necessarily, people used to ask me in interviews, like, did you feel a type of way when nobody spoke up for you? And I was like, honestly, not really. Like, you know, like, there were a couple people behind the scenes I talked to, you know, just that reached out or what have you.
When it happened for us specifically, so, yeah, that was like 06, 07, we did the And Justice for All. Was it 07? Wait, we did
It was January 07 when my shit happened.
Okay, it was January 7th. So I think maybe it's the next year. Maybe it was 08 or later that year. Anyway, we did Mick Boogie tape, And Justice for All.
I remember that.
Yeah, and I hit, I was telling Mick, I said,
so y'all
yo,
did that before the raid or after the raid?
That was after the raid.
Got you.
That was after the raid. Okay. Because I was telling Mick, I was like, yo, bro, like, we got to get Drom speaking on this. Because the first record on that tape was Can't Stop. It was a record called Can't Stop. It was where we was talking about that shit. And it was just like, I said, nah, bro, like, we got to get Drom talking because we not letting them shut this shit down. Yeah. Like, fuck y'all.
Amir, I felt the type of way, like, I felt a lot of guilt at the time because I'm like, damn, like, this is a culture like I grew up loving, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I can't let this shit die on my shoulders. Like, damn.
You felt like you killed the mixtape game?
For a moment. Well, for a moment, I did.
Metaphorically and literally.
Yeah, like I felt like, damn, the downfall of the fucking mixtape game is going to happen when I become the top of the food chain. And, like, you know, I spent a lot of time, like, you know, I still went and put tapes out right after that. And
how long was it until you looked both ways where you crossed the street and, like,
okay. Oh, I put a tape out like a month, two after. Like, I did, like, Gangsta Grills 16 and was just talking crazy on there. Like, you know, and I remember the first big, the first big mixtape that I probably did was Dedication 3. And then I remember, you know, that was after, you know, Wayne had went and said, like, fuck mixtape DJs or fuck DJs or something. Oh, wow. And then he called in my radio show and we cleared that up. And then, you know, we went on to do Dedication 3. But, yeah, I mean, again, I was like, you know, I had a point to prove. Like, yo, I'm not first, you know. And then Atlantic Records called literally the next day, like, oh, my God, how fast can we get your album done? Like, we can't pay for this type of publicity. Yeah. So,
what?
Was it Riggs?
Yeah, because the record,
Was it Riggs?
Riggs actually did all the skits on my first album.
Okay.
So Riggs did the, I mean, it was literally Julie and Craig, and I think Kevin was still there at the time, and Kai's, and then they all called, like, yo, we can't play for this type of publicity. How soon can you turn your album in? So, you know, my first single actually was titled Feds Taking Pictures.
Yeah, taking pictures,
yeah. So, you know, I went along with it.
You had it at the Beneath the Diamonds joint.
Oh, I love that.
I love that.
Yeah,
Denon
Porter, that was the shit.
For some reason, when that happened to you, I feel like a lot of people who knew you, we felt like it couldn't have happened to some better person who had resources or were prepared for it in a way. I don't know how to explain it to you, but we felt like we knew you were going to be okay because you were smart as fuck.
Right.
And because but is that another reason as to why I felt like it kind of came and went in a way? Resources?
Well, for me, I mean, you know, again, I mean, it literally made me more famous than I ever was. Mm-hmm. I mean, next thing I know,
you never had a cry moment. You was like,
The only cry moment I had is the next day I got out and I wasn't familiar with what the RICO was. And then I called Tip and Tip was like, bro, they hit you with the RICO. Like, check your bank account. My bank account said 0.00 after having six figures in it. So I definitely shed a tear. but after that,
did they return your stuff? Like, where is...
No, so we had two accounts.
Just for museum's sake, like, where is that stuff?
Well, they gave back... they gave back the equipment. They gave back one of our accounts. They gave back the account that, ironically, was, like, the label budget account. Okay. But the drama, like, the DJ drama account that I had with most of the money was, they kept that because they said they couldn't differentiate what was what. So we're keeping all of this.
But how long did it take to replace that? It wasn't that long.
I started making money. I mean, you know, I got it back. I got back up, you know. Didn't take me too long.
Obviously, it was a performative.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, like, what was the
end result?
The lesson learned? Like,
right. Yeah, I mean,
what's
you know,
the moral of the story?
The RIAA, you know, and around that time, me and Cannon had kind of had a falling out, and, you know, we went our separate ways for a moment, but the RIAA made us do this, like, PSA, where it was like, hey, kids, like,
don't
sell music. Yeah, oh, like,
they chilling and shit. They treat us good.
Very good, right?
Yeah, like, it never came, they never put it out, but they made it, we shot it at, Tree Sounds, and they literally, like, you know, gave us a script, like, if you make music.
Do you have a copy of it?
I wish I did.
Yo, man, you got to find that joint and put it on your Instagram.
I know it exists. It has to. And this was literally the first time me and Cannon had seen each other in a while, and we had to do it. You know, part of the agreement was us doing that PSA that they never put out. But it's like, you know, like, for me, like Laia said, like, when I was doing interviews, I remember saying, like, yo, this is not the end of my story. Like, this is one chapter. Yeah. Like, you know, for me, it was like, yeah, this is just, you know, anybody who's anybody gets hit with some type of adversity. And this is just my first, you know, my first real challenge. And, you know, I'm a be here. Like, I've been here. And at the time I had, you know, been here to up to that extent, not knowing what life had in mind for me up to this point. But it was like, yeah, like, this is just one chapter in my story. This is not the last chapter. Like, watch what I do.
Yo, what's up? This is Fontigolo from Team Supreme. Black representation in media is very important to me. I think it's important to have our stories told by people who look like us and who have shared in our common experiences. Some of my earliest influences were Donnie Simpson. I would also say Tom Joyner, Angela Stribling, Sherry Carter. They were just people who told our stories with a lot of class and dignity and were big inspirations to me. The next generation of influential Black voices can be found on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths. Black Stories, Black Truths is a celebration of Blackness from NPR. Each of NPR's Black voices are as distinct, varied, and nuanced as the Black experience itself. In the Black Stories, Black Truths collection, you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and creating world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is a living account about what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective. From Bobby Shmurda to The Wire, Michelle Obama to reparations, there's no limit to the range of Black Stories, Black Truths. Black perspectives haven't always been centered in the telling of America's story. Now, they are the story. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you'll find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes celebrating the Black experience. Hear a feed of episodes from across NPR's podcast, The Center Black Voices. It's NPR Noir. Listen now to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get podcasts.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Man, I always wanted to ask you about the Art of Storytelling 3.
I was just about to bring that up.
Come on, man. How did that come together?
Three or four?
Four.
Oh, four. I'm sorry.
It was four. I was like, wait, yeah, there's a three?
Yeah.
Okay. There is a three. That's why it's four. Big Boy has to tell you where the three exists. Because he told me. Because that's why we Art of Storytelling 4.
Okay.
But I was supposed to do an Idlewild Gangsta Grills.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Really?
Yeah, I was supposed to do a tape around that time. We were gonna do a tape pre Idlewild, going into the project. Stax, Big, and their manager Blue got on the phone and they came to me like, "Yo, we want to do a Gangsta Grills," and I was like, "Hell, motherfucking yeah!" And then a few months later, they called and was like, "Listen, bro, we're just buckled down with the movie and the soundtrack, and we apologize, but we don't have time to do the tape." And they were like, "But how about we offer you a song for your album?" And I was like, "Hell yeah, like, of course." So I started the process of literally sending 3,000 beats from every big known name producer out at the time, you know, because this is the time when I was doing the first Gangsta Grill album. Gangsta Grills was the biggest thing going, so everybody was pretty much giving me beats, and I would send them the 3,000, and he would be like, nah. He would pretty much turn everything down. One of the last tapes I made before the raid was Jim Jones' 7-Day Theory tape.
From We Set the Trends?
That Jim Jones.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the tape, our first tape was called The 7-Day Theory, which was a fire tape. Max B is all over there. Rest in peace, Stack was on there. You know, that was when he created Bird Gang. And there was a beat on that tape, and I asked Cannon, like, make me a beat similar to that beat. So Cannon made the beat, and then we had gotten, the raid had happened, and Lake was actually managing Marsha at the time.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So I sent the beat to Marsha, and I told Marsha, I was like, yo, like, look, like, man, they just locked us up. Like, people saying this is the end for me. Like, I need something. Like, nothing's going to stop us. Like, I'm going to be here. Like, you can't stop us. And she literally, like, took what I said and turned it into the hook. And I sent the record to 3,000. And he said, I'm going to
call you tomorrow. 24 hours later, he sends me back his verse of Art of Storytelling Part 4. And I just was like, I couldn't believe it that I had an Andre 3000 verse. Like, and on top of a Don Cannon beat. Like,
yeah.
So then I went to Stankonia and I played it for Big. I think at the time I was like, I was still trying to figure out what record Big had wanted to be on. I played him a couple records. And then when I played him that, he was like, oh, what are we talking about? Like, I'm doing this. So he did his verse. And then Big was like, yo, we should call it Art of Storytelling Part 4. And then hence, you know, I literally have a fucking Outkast record on my album. And then, you know, I wish I would have knew then, I wish I would have knew now what I knew then, because 3000 offered to do the video and he was just like, yo, I just need 100,000 from the label. And me not as knowledgeable as I was then, I kind of let the opportunity like pass. And looking back on it, I would have told the label, give me fucking 100 grand to give this man for this record. Like, we probably could have got a Grammy nomination out of that, you know what I'm saying, if it would have literally happened. But I mean, it's still an amazing record. You know, how many DJs can say they have an Outkast record? Like,
facts.
It's one of my proudest moments in my career.
And you still got a Grammy.
Yeah, and I still wound up getting a Grammy.
Well, how did you approach making the transition from DJ to executive?
Naturally, honestly. I mean, it was just like, you know, again, relevancy has always been very key for me in my career and like staying on the cusp. And I think a lot of that comes from being a mixtape DJ and like just like my addiction to new shit, like my fascination of like what's next, you know what I'm saying? And not kind of letting myself get boxed into one thing, you know, like. There was a tweet somebody had put out, was like, yo, DJ Drama literally went from The Roots and Bahamadia to Tip, Jeezy, and Wayne to Lil Uzi and Jack Harlow. Like, give this man his
flowers.
That's
hip-hop.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. So, you know, just around, I had, when I was making my albums, I had left Atlantic and went to E1, and, you know, I was still using a lot of the staff over at Atlantic, just kind of independently to work my records and things of that nature. And I started to make like records that were having success, like Oh My, like My Moment. And so when I was doing that, one of the people, you know, I used to have Sam Crespo work my records.
Man, Sam and, Crespo.
My brother Sam. And Sam was like, yo, you should like think about being an A&R. Like, you know, I should bring the idea to Julian Craig, like, you know, you're putting together some real good records. Like, maybe it could be an opportunity for you to come in a building and be an A&R. And I was like, I'm down. So he mentioned it to Julian Craig. And, you know, clearly, you know, they were like, Drom, that's our guy. Like, we love Drom. So I flew to New York. I had a meeting with Craig, Julian, Kaiser. And they were like, you know, are you interested in, you know, coming over here as an A&R? And I was like, yeah. And then I was like, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm building a studio in Atlanta that, you know, you guys might want to partner with me on. And at the time, Kawan Prather, KP, was vice president in Atlantic. He was working out of another studio. They sent him over to my spot, Mean Streets, to check it out to see, you know, what he thought. And he was like, oh, yeah, this is dope. Like, this could be a thing for us. So part of my deal when I came over as an A&R was also for Atlantic to be partners with me on Mean Streets. So I literally, you know, took their money and built the rest of Mean Streets up to, you know, from what I had already built from it. And when I got there, I really was kind of trying to find my way. They had put me with like artists that were already on the label to try to work with, and it wasn't meshing. Like, it wasn't, you know, I would go to A&R meetings and things, and, you know, they would give me artists to try to work with, and it just kind of, it wasn't.
Do you remember who they were trying to put you with at the time? Anybody you can name?
So, Spenzo, Boosie. Cap G was KP's guy, and he was there. He was around, but, you know, those were some of the artists that, you know, early on they kind of wanted me to, quote unquote, I guess, A&R, be a part of. And then also Thug was, you know, I happened to be the closest thing to Thug in those days that they felt like could be of an assistance to help
with Thug and, you know, getting music or, you know.
This is Young, not Slim. I'm sorry. It's a few of them.
Young Thug.
Okay. Yeah, thug. Okay. Is thug. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Young Thug, not Slim Thug. Yeah. Shout out to Slim Thug. He's got a Gangsta Grills too, though. But so, yeah, Thug was working a lot of Mean Streets. So, you know, I was kind of in the mix with Thug and Atlantic and, you know, just trying to make that whole thing kind of work out. And it went how it went. But we also, you know, myself, Lake, and Cannon, you know, when Cannon was vice president of Def Jam around the time I got my gig, and then we had missed out on a couple opportunities of artists. I took Migos to New York for the first time and presented them to Alan Grumblack, and he offered them pennies. And, you know, they went and did the right thing and went to QC. Shout to Coach and P. You know, those are my guys. You know, we kind of started our labels around the same time. But me, Cannon, and Lake were like, yo, we can't miss nothing else. Like, we're not missing nothing else.
I was going to say, besides Migos, who?
So, Tory Lanez, I wanted to sign Tory. OT Genesis. T-Fly, we actually wanted to sign T-Fly. So those are a few that, you know, were in the midst of us and, you know, when we were trying to figure out the label thing or signing artists of around the time. Cannon came back one day and just was like, yo, I heard this kid Lil Uzi Vert. And I was like, let's do it. Get him.
Sight unseen?
Unseen.
That is crazy.
Yeah, if you believe, if your man believe in it, it's unseen, like, all right, fuck it, let's go.
Never heard nothing, didn't know nothing. Where's he at? What are we doing? Like, and it was...
This is around what year?
This was 2014.
Oh.
Yeah, 2014.
Wait, that's when?
Yeah, we signed Uzi 2015.
I was about to say, I know that we had Uzi on the Roots pick, like, way before he had a deal.
No, you did him...
That was like 20.
No, you did
16, when he was opening
17, 16. Yeah, 16. Yeah.
That he did Roots Pick.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Money Long. It was Money Long. It was before EXO Tour Life.
Okay.
It was Money Longer days
when
he did Roots Pick.
Right.
Because I did it in 2017. Because when I brought Little Baby.
Yeah, y'all had that stage going.
They were looking like, who is this guy? Like, I remember that.
Right.
I brought Baby to Roots Picnic. And I think that was right before the Drake record, like, or maybe the Drake record, it just came out. But literally, I remember the crowd, like, not understanding, like, I just brought y'all Little Baby, like, here. Right. But, so, yeah, so we signed, Scheme actually was our first artist that we signed. Shout out to Scheme. He's kind of mad at me because I haven't brought his name up when I talk about the label. So we signed Scheme, and we signed Uzi, and we were trying to sign this group called The Wedding Crashers, which Quentin Miller was a part of.
Got it.
So we named it Generation Now. Generation Now was actually a mixtape title that I had used early on before Little Brother and the Pharrell tapes. I had gotten drops from Kanye West. He was opening up for Talib Kweli, wound up getting drops from Kanye West. I also got some drops from Joe Budden. And it was like, damn, this is not Gangsta Grill. This doesn't feel Gangsta Grills. So I needed another title for another brand. So I came up with Generation Now. Years later, we wound up double backing when we were looking for a title for the label. And I was like, what about Generation Now? So the guys were like, yeah, that's fire. So Atlantic was on the verge of firing me. Like, I was 2 years into my deal and they were looking at it like, look, we just paid DJ Drama all this money.
He ain't bought us shit.
We put all this money into this studio.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing? What's going on? Like, where's our return? Craig Kalman came to Atlanta. We sat in the radio room of the Mean Streets, and he said, "Look, Drum, I believe in you. You know, I don't want to let you go. Like, let's just do a 1 year deal. We'll stay partners on the studio, and you guys just focus on Uzi. Like, you guys just focus on Little Uzi." And I was like, cool. Like, I'm with that. Like, okay, cool. And next thing you know, Love Is Rage comes out. Mean Streets becomes the go-to studio in Atlanta, and the tables turned within 6 months in a 180, and, you know, it was like, told you.
Not going.
Your ancestors are watching you
and guiding you, man.
How did Jack get on y'all's radar? Because for me, Jack, he was the record, and I don't think this was before Generation Now. My record was Sundown. Like, that was the one that I heard. I was like,
he was
oh,
on your Generation Now.
That was Generation Now? Oh, yeah. Then, okay.
He had put out a record called Dark Knight. That was the one that really forced our hand. But we had heard of him before them. A friend of mine brought him to me late 2017 and put him on my radar. And then, you know, KY Engineering, who is based in Atlanta, who had engineered for Wayne, Tyga. He mixed Dreams and Nightmares. He mixed that whole first album. He was Waka Flocka's engineer. He's 2 Chainz's engineer. He mixed my records. He did my Quality Street Music album. His name is KY because he's from Kentucky. So around the same time, he was telling...
Right?
Okay. Just making sure.
He was telling Lake, like, yo, I want to bring you something when it's ready. So Jack wound up on my radar. I went and followed him. He had like 7,000 followers. He saw that I followed him. He followed me right back. He then went on to tell me later on that he told a friend of his, like, damn, DJ Drama just signed to me. I think I'm assigned to Drum. Wow. So he winds up coming, being in Atlanta and coming to Mean Streets. And, you know, that was our first time meeting. And we, like, you know, we sat down, we chopped it up, we were talking. He was like, you know, what are you into? And I'm like, I'm in a movie, like, I'm a movie buff. Like, I just love movies. And he was like, tell me a movie that you think that I would be shocked that you would know. And I told him it was this movie called E2 Ma Tambien.
Oh, yeah, E2 Ma Tambien. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he was like, wait, what? He was like, DJ Drama?
E2 Ma Tambien?
Has watched E2 Ma Tambien.
They think they know.
Like,
they don't have no.
Yes, you've been to the Ritz.
Like, so I think that really blew his mind. And then, you know, we had a meeting, you know, with Jack and, you know, our staff. And he was on, you know, the opportunity was about signing him was there. And then we weren't 100%. We were like 75%. And then he put out Dark Knight. And we was like, okay, we got to do it. Like, we got to sign this kid before we miss out. So we went on to sign Jack. And, it, you know, again, this is, you know, when I signed Jack, he looked like Napoleon Dynamite. Like,
right.
So, you know, he's come along. The heart, the yeah. sex symbol heartthrob that he is of today mm-hmm. was, you know, he's come a long way. But I saw it in him. Like, I, you know, the same way I saw it in Uzi early on. Like, you know, I saw, like, these are two guys that, for me, like, regardless of us being evolved, they would have made their way into hip hop. Same way, regardless of however I would have been, I was
with
gonna
or without you.
Yeah, I was gonna get here somehow, some way. But again, we allowed them to stand on our shoulders to, you know, go a little faster. You know, me walking him in the sway, and you know him being able to, you know, just move around. Especially somebody like Jack, who, you know, is a white rapper from Kentucky, mm-hmm. to be able to say he signed to Generation Now and DJ Drama, who created Gangsta Grills and the label that, you know, Lil Uzi Vert was a part of. I mean, I think that brought a lot of, you know.
You think?
Yeah, to the table, yeah. You know.
All right, y'all. You know what season it is. 'Tis the season for spring breaking and planning our summer travel. And if you're like me, you're already in your Airbnb app trying to find which spot is right for you. Now, listen, while I'm looking to spend all this money, what I'm not doing is thinking about making money with Airbnb. See, you got to change your mind state. Make the money while you're spending the money. How, you say, Laia, do I make the money? Well, you host at your house. And I know what you're thinking. I mean, my whole house? No, you don't have to do your whole house. I mean, you could do a room or, you know, do the whole house. So make some money while you're spending some money this summer. I'm trying to tell you, your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
All right, before we got to wrap up this, the episode. This is
damn. We have to.
You don't even know how long we've been sitting here, do you?
No, I thought we just started.
That's hilarious.
The camera crew got to go home.
Yeah, that means you got to invite us back, and we'll come to your spot.
But okay, but before we wrap, like, and I don't know if you're aware of this because I say it all the time, but sitting at this table, like, I have to say, even though I say it all the time, you got to understand, Amir, like, if it wasn't for y'all, like, I don't know if I would be here. Like, watching, like, running into...
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Questlove Supreme.
You said you were going to start taking your flowers. What you doing? You said you were going to start taking your flowers.
This is the ongoing joke of the show where they watch me squirm.
Like, bro, listen.
But I know he means it because, like, that shit is real.
Like, I used to run into Amir playing video games on South Street, and he would put his headphones on me and let me hear fucking Tariq rapping like G-Rap or like, you know, like I used to go to I was at the Trocadero at their signing celebration party. Like for me, like I remember when Distortion the Static first came on Rap City. Like,
yes, sir.
So
yes.
Like, you got to understand, yes. For me, bro, like the roots are the reason why I knew that you could really do this shit. Like, oh, this shit can really happen. Like, I just watched this group in Philly.
Watch her face.
I'm just making him take it because it's hard. It's painful. Go ahead. Keep going.
Like, I watched this group that I loved make this album called Organics while I'm in high school, and that's all I'm listening to. And then, like, get a record deal, like, get signed to Geffen. Like, these guys that were freestyling on my little mixtapes that probably only 100 copies exist didn't go on to become the fucking Roots. Like, oh, my God, this rap shit is real. Like, everything before that for me was just seeing it on, like, watching The Box and seeing Kane and KRS and Public Enemy and NWA is just like me watching it on television. Like, I knew y'all. Like, I was there. So that for me was literally the reason. Like, I say it all the time. Like, you are the reason why I knew this shit could really happen, bro. Like, and I have to give you your flowers by sitting here next to you.
Thank you.
It's for the documentary. Right. It's gonna be great.
No, I appreciate every word. Yes. Years ago, I would have definitely ended the episode because I hate compliments. No, but I really appreciate that.
And this conversation was long overdue, yeah. So.
No, for real.
Long overdue on every song, even for me.
Oh, y'all, yeah.
Like, no shit.
And I'm very proud. Like, again, like, you know, the fact that you validated us as well, because it meant a lot to me that, like, wow, someone believes in us enough to put us on a mixtape. Mm. Like, to me, that was important.
Mm. Black Thought Gangsta Grills is definitely on my bucket list because it's full circle for me. Like, it has, that's one that
Wow, that'd be amazing.
Yeah, it has to happen.
I was going to say that eventually one day you're going to have to make a Gangsta Griselda tape.
It's fire.
You got to make that happen.
It's fire.
This intro will make that happen.
No, great idea.
Wait, I have one last question. I've been watching how things have been developing in the last few weeks. Speaking of Griselda. And initially what started out as something that could have gone ugly has actually turned into kind of like a cool moment.
Talking about with Flex?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where initially, you know, there were complaints that you're not supporting, da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe once every 5 years I'll hear another generation come in that will tell whoever the gatekeeper is. Like, let somebody else in and let somebody. But as a DJ, and I usually go through this kind of quasi-depression period, maybe in November and December. Right? Well, okay, so 2023 is coming up. So instantly I'm like, all right, so someone born in 2002 is now legally going to be louder than nightclub.
Right.
And not that means when they're like 14 years old and, you know, 2016 or whatever. I mean, like, I'm always doing the math of reference points. To me, I don't know. Like, for you, is there ever a time where you're just like, I don't know, I might be
too old for this shit?
Now, I don't want to just reduce it to as too old for this shit, but like,
too old for this shit. I mean, I
like right now,
it's exhausting to keep up.
Like, I legit was on Wikipedia, like, taking a crash course in drill. Because I just like, all right, I got to educate myself. Like, I hold a whole bunch of gigs coming up for a bunch of kids.
Oh, yeah. You got
and
Ice Spice.
I don't want to be that person, but it's like, I feel like if you have to be paint by numbers, like, okay, what are the kids? Whatever. But for you, like, is there ever a point where you just get exhausted where it's just like, dog, just throw Roy Ayers' album on and I'm calling it a day. Like, I'm going to.
Never.
I'm going to take a nap.
Never.
Or whatever. So there's never a point where you saw an act like, okay, this is what the future is, or like...
No.
So for you, like, the more dangerous it is, the more you, people my age are... Well,
there's talent in every generation.
Yeah, and I think, again, like I said, like, I'm from a mixtape culture where it's like, new shit, new shit, new shit. So it's like, my fascination is with, like what's next? Like, my label is called Generation Now, you know? So for me, it's like... The fact that I've been able to navigate through fucking being in a Bahamadia video to Jack Harlow, you know, or to Tyler, Creator, Call Me If You Get Lost and winning a Grammy, like, my career has literally been an example of being able to surf through the eras. So, like, you know, I love where hip hop is today. Last night I went to the Wu-Tang and Nas concert. And I was like a kid in a candy store, you know? I mean, that's my era. Like, yeah. That's when, you know, when you're, I think when you're a teen, those are your pivotal moments, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, for me, I'm like, as a 44-year-old man, I'm in heaven, you right. know? But at the same time, I'm also a DJ who more likely plays for audiences in their 20s than I do for audiences in their 40s. So it keeps me current and... Again, I just love the culture so much. So I love every diaspora of it. You know what I'm saying? So I don't, you know, this shit keeps me 21 forever. Like,
right.
Even now having this resurgence of Gangsta Grills, whether it's with Simba or whether it's Icewear Vezo or Ceddie Hendrix, or, you know, it's like being able to still be in this space. And, you know, I got to give Tyler his flowers for, you know, in a sense, kind of, you know, bringing this resurgence of Gangsta Grills back for what he did. Yeah, so no, I don't get in that space. Like, I'm, you know, I'm to be a DJ and to have the accolades that I have, it's like my goal was to get my name on a flyer. So the success that I've had, I don't take none of it for granted. And as much as I've accomplished, the way my brain works is always like, damn, what the fuck am I going to do next? You know what I'm saying? So I think that's what keeps me in this space of still being excited about, you know, tomorrow or not. You know, again, being on the Wiz and Logic tour, when I'm out there, I'm asking, you know, all my 2000s babies make some noise, and they make a lot of fucking noise. Like, still a lot of 90s babies in there too, and the 80s babies are a little more quiet. I don't even ask about the 70s. I leave that alone. But... You know, even when I walk out on stage, you know, having these kids, like, say my name and chant my name and be familiar with me because of Tyler or because of the Dreamville mixtape, like, is such a blessing, you know what I'm saying, that, you know, I'm still here. And
you're still finding a new audience.
And I'm still finding a new audience, and I'm excited about it, you know. As much as I'm excited about being able to go to the fucking Nas and Wu-Tang show and, you know, seeing that sell out.
And shout out to you, God, who thought I was a stalker in the hotel lobby this morning. I'm literally like, you got, what, man? I was like, it's me. So, Quest, that you? Oh, man, I'm sorry. I thought you was, like, he thought
but,
I was.
But you got to understand, too, like, even, I don't want to do this, make you squirm again, but, like, bro, like, bro, I saw you in the fucking, like, I was there past the popcorn. You're on television every night. Like, you have a fucking Oscar, bro. Like, you have an Oscar. Like,
well,
those things to me are like, yo, the sky is not the limit. There's no limit.
I'm going
to
tell you this much. I'm not even blowing smoke. Today was a teachable lesson because every time you say something, I'm like, wait a minute. How are you just yes and jumping into some shit without like seeing who's going to be there first?
Yeah, I'm
like
that.
And I need to be more. So this is actually
talking
more.
You're a little more bougie than I am.
I'm very much. I'm guarded. Yeah, I'm protected. I'm guarded. Yeah,
we know that.
I want the formula to work. I want to break down the scientific.
He has crystals in his Crocs.
So if you run into somebody in the street right now and they're like, yo, I'm an aspiring artist over.
In the street.
He ain't talking to nobody in these streets.
Can I get your number?
What you doing?
Five people. Blau. Slum Village.
Not since 2003.
Jill Scott. Blau, Slum Village, Jill Scott. Little brother,
LB.
I'm 5-0, but I'm probably 5-42,000.
Oh, those five, like, came to you.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a position where I was like, I felt in my heart like, Cody Chestnut, that was my five.
Oh, I remember. Oh, he was on Automatic Relaxation.
Yes,
definitely was.
One more.
Definitely was on
all right, give relaxation. All right, we got to wrap up, but please give Laia another Automatic Relaxation.
Not just me. It's a whole bunch of people, you know.
Yeah.
It's a few of y'all.
Yeah.
Can I just give you copies of the old ones?
I'll take that, too.
Like, there's it's not, I mean, we when it was what it was, like, now that there's a lot of that out now.
There's nothing Spotify like, playlists.
Yeah, but it ain't nothing like Automatic.
But I think coming from you, I think now at this point in your
nostalgia
career
of it.
No, I don't think
it would be that for you now. Like if you did that now, it's gonna be
you
new
can probably
to the
teach
audience.
People.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, it's gonna be
and
a
they'll
new
be
thing.
Listening now. Now you don't have to go where Gangsta Grills is where they went. And,
they're gonna check for DJ Drama regardless. So if you went in that lane, it would be something new to that audience.
Nah, I respect it when you say it.
Automatic Relaxations and Gangsta Griselda. There you go. All right, on behalf of Questlove Supreme, yo, Fonte and Sugar Steve and Laia.
Sugar Steve didn't say anything.
He was...
I'm learning.
Except about the skateboarder in Philly.
Steve's here, trust me. Anyway, no, thank you for doing this, man.
Man, thank you
I
for
really
having
appreciate it.
Oh, my
Shout
God.
Shout out to FAMU.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Best school in the nation.
Shout out to FAMU.
Second school.
Thank you to the staff, everyone. FAMU, thank you. And
thank
T.I.,
you,
thank you.
Thank you, y'all.
And I am going to break that Ms. Pac-Man record. One more time.
Yeah, so, shout out to Exit. Shout out to my man.
Yo,
Exit
listen,
with
just
Pac-Man record.
One day, if somebody comes, just give them your number, bro. You never know.
He's not.
You don't have to answer. Like
7987, Amir.
They text me all the time. Like, if I don't want to answer, I don't have to answer. You know, random people have just. When I was on tour, this guy just called me out of nowhere and was like, hey, this is DJ Drama. I'm like, yeah, where'd you get my number? He's like, my manager gave it to me. And he was like, yo, I'm a new artist. And I said, listen, bro, I'm going to jewel you real quick. Like, when I was coming up, I couldn't just call Jay-Z or Funkmaster Flex. Like, I'm like, and most people aren't going to be as nice as me, but I'm telling you, before you try to get on my radar, look to your left and look to your right and try to create a movement with the people around you. And then before you know it, you'll be on my radar. Like, don't just call the big wigs and think you can get on. Like, it's not that easy. I couldn't call Jay-Z or Flex and say, hey, I'm DJ Drama, like, I'm dope. Like, and I was, but I didn't have
what
the right
mean to them.
I didn't have the right to do that yet. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, teachable.
That's
moments.
The jewel right there. All right. We'll see you on the next go around. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Questlove Supreme is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.